Hey friends, it's Eric Swanson, co-host of 30 Minutes in the New Testament, here with a special announcement. And that announcement is that 30 Minutes in the New Testament can now be found on YouTube. If you click on the link in the show notes here just below me, you're going to see that we have our own YouTube page. And the reason we're doing that is because from now on, we're going to be recording not just audio of the episodes, which will continue on the various podcast platforms that you use, but we're also going to film our episodes so that you can access video. And so make sure to click on that link, subscribe today so you can keep up with all the clips we release and all our future episodes. Thanks so much.
Hello and welcome to Let the Bird Fly, a podcast about living freely in a world given back to us. This is Wade here in the podcast studio, joined by my dear friend and friends, plural, and colleagues, the Reverend Dr. Michael Berg. He missed the last one, but we got him back now. And the Reverend Professor Jason Oakland. And this is the new and improved Let the Bird Fly. We are working to get episodes out weekly, so we're working a little bit ahead. This is Easter Thursday, and this will be coming out a little bit after that. But today we're going to be talking about every time Easter comes around or any of the church holidays comes around, you get this stuff of, well, this Christianity just took this pagan thing, right? Yeah. Or this or that is pagan. And I kind of like the meme I saw once where it was like, you know, telling the pagans, like, keep it up and we'll take another holiday.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Keep tempting us. But I thought it would be an interesting topic to maybe talk about, and not just is Easter pagan or whatever else. But Christianity and paganism, what was paganism? How did they relate? Did the Christian church think there was nothing of value in anything the pagans ever taught or said or done, which would be a lot of things, right? How did they approach pagan culture, appropriation of things or not appropriating things, what tensions maybe were there. So that's going to be the kind of things we'll be talking about. Michael, are you willing to, do you agree Jason can be our resident pagan for this episode? Does that sound fair?
If I would have guessed of us three, who would be the pagan?
I'm going to be moderator.
Okay. All
right. So I'm going to let you be the Christian.
Okay.
And Jason, stupid pagan.
I just get to be the pagan?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm just joking. You don't have to be a pagan if you don't want to.
Well, you know, we'll see what happens.
Let the Bird Fly is part of the 1517 Podcasting Network. You can go to 1517.org, find all sorts of good stuff there. New free academy course from Bruce Hillman. That should be interesting. Daily articles. I had one the other day. Jason had one not too long ago. Michael's going to get one coming up here.
I don't know.
At some point. you'll be all
stretch.
Right. You can go to the publishing house, buy books. Michael has a book over there. You can buy Michael's book. If you run into him, he will sign it. You'll have two books over there, sorry. And will you send both of them or just one of the two?
I'll send both.
So if you run into Michael.
This will be the same thing. I'm not coming up with two different things.
You don't write Keep on Trucking for everybody but me, right?
Yeah.
That's just my thing? Okay. So you cannot get a Keep on Trucking. He probably would give it. He doesn't care. He'd give it to you if you asked for it. But that's the one he wrote for me that I really enjoy.
Just don't tell Wade that's what you got.
Yeah.
Never change. Have a good summer.
Yeah. So go to 1517.org. Check out all the great stuff there. And we haven't said in a while, but if you're enjoying the podcast, and if you haven't done so before, maybe think about going to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and rate and review us. And 5 stars is really appreciated. That really helps us bump us up in the algorithm, so if you think we're saying something worthwhile, sometimes that maybe helps, and we would appreciate your rate and review, or go ahead and share on Facebook and Twitter. But lest we go too long with our intro, Michael or Jason, would you be willing to give us our disclaimer?
This show doesn't speak for our churches or church bodies or our employers, to be honest. Much of the time, it probably doesn't speak for us. We will be thinking out loud a lot, so approach what you hear with a healthy skepticism, because, well, as a responsible resident of planet Earth, that's probably what you should generally do with almost everything. If you find yourself getting too worked up, tune out, look around, and realize you were just listening to a podcast. That's right, a podcast. So go live free, friends, and don't let us get in the way.
And so that brings us to our main topic, Christianity and paganism. And we'll see where it takes us. Would our resident pagan like to say anything as we begin?
I'm looking for my hammer of Thor as we speak. And,
Oh, you're that kind of pagan.
Well, there's lots of ways we could go.
The Norse.
Norse, yeah.
I was picturing to be more Mediterranean.
Mediterranean? Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of drawn to the northerly climes there.
All right. So. Is that because of Marvel movies or?
No, I would say just more.
You prefer that paganism.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think so. Probably it has something to do with heritage and ancestors and that type of thing, but.
Hatred of the Swedes.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, we will go ahead and talk Christianity and paganism. And again, that episode idea came up partly, talking with people, and you hear every year, oh, Easter is a pagan holiday, and you get all these theories of where it comes from. We get this with Christmas. Well, Christmas is a pagan holiday. All sorts of things that associated with how the church worships on these days or practices of Christians on these days. You'll get, well, the Christmas tree is pagan, or the Easter bunny is pagan, or lilies are pagan or whatever else. And often that gets said too as if, well, even if that came from paganism, well, that means it has to be abolished. Mm-hmm. Right? We've got to get rid of it. Christianity should have nothing to do with anything that comes from a pagan religious or cultural or political heritage. But if you study church history, you see pretty quickly that was about an impossibility.
Yes.
For the early church. And so maybe if we can start off, if we can just talk about what we mean or what is meant by paganism. This is coming back again. There's neo-pagans, right?
Yeah,
people are kind of getting back into the old religions. And I don't know if it's because they actually believe them or they like the aesthetic or whatever else. But the word pagan itself has been used in a lot of different ways. It was used at least sometimes kind of to mean hick or hillbilly. These were the people out in the sticks who hadn't converted yet. They're still sticking to the old religion. Kind of, right, we've come full circle because Christianity now is seen as like this, oh, that's flyover country, mm-hmm. where the Christians are, and then you've got the coasts, right? And so the more rural, less urban, they're less sophisticated, they're still holding to the old religion. Well, that was kind of a reversal as Christianity begins to spread, as Christianity was overwhelmingly at its beginning an urban religion, right? It comes out of Israel and a shepherd people, but Paul's missionary journeys take him to city after city, and early churches largely founded in cities, Paul's writing to cities, and so kind of pagan rural in the sticks, still holding to the old religion. And yet, it wasn't they were holding to. I'll just say what they were holding to was it had centuries and millennia of heritage, and it was a very rich history, right? And it multifaceted, diverse. It wasn't all one thing. And so it's not as if a pagan was just a yokel, who was thoughtless or had no sophistication, but that the term could sometimes be used in that way. But I'll throw to you guys, what comes to mind when you think paganism?
I was just going to say that I think the terminology, both pagan and heathen, don't necessarily speak to the idea of beliefs as much, but location, right? And that, which I think is what you're kind of driving at there, this idea that, there might be a wide variety of pagans or heathens or whatever, that as far as a wide variety of beliefs, but it was kind of these, you know, local, rural type of, right. But it was, you know, focused around their spiritual life.
And much of that ancient religion, I think you bring up a good point with that too. Christianity early on is a set of beliefs as well as practices.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we talk about orthodoxy pretty early on, believing the right things. It was very doctrinal. And ancient, you know, Greco-Roman religion wasn't nearly as much about belief necessarily as practice and heritage.
Right.
You could have people who would have participated in Greek and Roman religion who were almost monotheists, if not monotheists. In fact, if you look at many of the famous Greek philosophers, they're going to talk in a monotheistic way. So I think that is a good thing to keep in mind as well. Mm-hmm. Michael, any thoughts you have?
Yeah, when we think about ancient religions, polytheism, all this kind of stuff, there's something about monotheism as practiced by the Hebrew people and then Christianity. It's not so much they believe in one God as opposed to the polytheist who believed in many gods. It's part of it. It's right in the name. But as you said, many of the ancient religions are still going to have kind of a number one idea.
Right.
Right.
They have stories that ingrain
themselves. There's going to be some sort of originator, creation myth. There's going to be something. It's hard to imagine, unless you're a strict dualist, it's hard to imagine that things came from multiple points, right? That it came from one. There's a singularity there, right? So, but what I think often distinguishes monotheism from the other ones is that God speaks. And when God speaks, then you're in the realm of dogma. And so for the polytheists, let's say like in Arabian Peninsula, right, you have multiple stories. It's a cultural thing. It does give you a sense of identity, belonging, maybe a certain ethic or whatever. The Greco-Roman gods are something a little bit different, where they're saying something about humanity more than they're saying something about the gods, right? So, and probably would have been considered more sophisticated than maybe the Hebrew monotheist, right? And then that flips, as you say, where, okay, are you still holding on to the idea of Zeus and Hermes and not seeing these as myths that are fun stories that say something about humanity? You're the yokel, you're the pagan, you're the one holding on to that thing. And then civilized people, Christian civilized people, that's certainly a big deal in like the 1800s and 1900s. And today, yeah, maybe it's reversing a little bit, that if you still are somebody who believes in anything, that somehow you're a little bit backwards. I think that's changing again. But as you said in chapel today, the people who are neo-pagan or unbelievers, if there is such a thing, would be living off the borrowed capital of this monotheistic God says something. And when God says something, there is a point outside of yourself for truth. And that becomes the basis for human rights and the capital.
And this really leaves a mark on the West, because if you think of take something like communist, which people might think, you know, communism is antithetical to Christianity. Well, actually, though, communism is drawing on Christian capital because of how dogmatic it is, right? It is a system of belief, and it talks about orthodoxy. You know, Stalin calls Tito this heterodox communist because of Yugoslavia, you know, not being as in the Stalinist orbit as he wants. Think of how people think of politics in general or things today and party platforms. This really does shape the West in an important way, Christianity does, of kind of dogma and assertion. Not that it's not there for paganism, but I agree with you, monotheism and a God who talks, and you mentioned that, and you think of even, if you're thinking of Greco-Roman pagan religion, they did believe you could kind of get a sense for the divine, like you could try to manipulate it. We're going to sacrifice a pig and look at its entrails. We're going to go to the oracle at Delphi, which is fascinating to read about how you know, the oracles would work in that. But that's learning the divine, engaging the divine, hearing from the divine in a very different way than what you're going to have in Judaism, Islam, or Christianity. Maybe, and Michael, you might be the one to hit best on this, just with you teaching worship as well. We had an episode where we talked about Christian myth, because sometimes as Christians, we dismiss any talk of myth because we go, well, that's a pagan thing, and all our stories are true stories. And that is, right, I'm not saying that Jesus isn't real and the resurrection isn't real. I just preached on it. I don't think I said it was fake or anything. But the power of myth or story, I think, is something that's very rooted in paganism. And it's why, Jason joked about Thor, why Thor's in Marvel movies.
Right, yeah.
It's why the Christian church preserved and kept reading some of the classics, Odyssey, Iliad, Virgil's Aeneid. In fact, when we were in college, we for Latin track, we had to read the Aeneid in Latin. And it doesn't just throw these things out. And maybe a good connection point here then is while you have this difference in worldview or how systematically people think in ways between, and I'm thinking here Greco-Roman paganism and Christianity as it emerges in the Mediterranean, maybe a commonality is story. And maybe story is a good connection point if we talk about the relationship between Christianity and paganism. Would you say, is it fair to say, as some Christians would say, as Tertullian got at, what does Athens do with Jerusalem, that there's nothing redeemable in paganism? Or is there maybe something in paganism's love of story that is actually a connection point and maybe teaches us things as Christians, not as divine revelation, but the same as a non-Christian mathematician, right, may make discoveries with algebra that we don't throw out because they didn't come from strict monotheism or something like that. Michael, anything that comes to mind with that?
Yeah, quite a few things. I mean, let me go back. I don't know if I'm going to get to all of it, but maybe what you said previous about interest in you know, paganism now, I believe that's we're leaving the modern period, and you're trying to fill a vacuum, a spiritual vacuum with something. And I don't mean like, oh, I just, at this touchy-feely, I need some spirituality, but the role of myth, the symbolic nature of things, to say something more than just something that it comes from a biology or chemistry textbook, right? And these things do say something about humanity and the human condition. And so Christians don't or shouldn't burn books. We're not afraid of other knowledges, so to speak.
Right.
We will combat them. You know, this is Paul in Athens kind of stuff. And so it's interesting to think about then the useful myth, right? Myths can be useful. we can use those things that are not true, but still have a usefulness when teaching about something doctrinally.
We have a prep school, which is not the one that you graduated from, Michael, but the other one in our synod, and their mascot, if I'm not mistaken, right? Their team name is
Phoenix.
The Phoenix, yeah.
So, and the greatness of those stories, right, are something that separates us from the animals, right? It's a desiring we have. This is it shows the desiring of the nations only fulfilled by Christ who fulfills that, right? We talked about this before, this interesting concept then of these stories that are often very similar. There's often a messianic figure. It's a flood story. There's a, you know, all these.
Death to life, yeah.
And so there's three options. Option number one is, this is just cultural borrowing, right? And so the Christians borrowed these things, right? So they weren't monotheists. The Zoroastrians were the first monotheists. And other tribes talked about resurrection, and so then they just made it their own, that kind of stuff. No proof of that. You know, they didn't give footnotes. B, there are too many similar stories from places that could not have really done cultural borrowing, or they would be, it would be a big leap.
Yep, there's no internet or flights between them.
Yeah. And C, they're not always as similar as we make them out to be. So, a God who comes back to life in some mythological story is something completely different than I know that my Redeemer lives and in my flesh I will see. Yeah. Option number two is that there is a story that gets handed down from Noah to his three boys, and there are shadows throughout it. So there's a flood story everywhere. There is the idea of sacrifice. As misinterpreted as that may be, there is an idea of sacrifice. Right? And so there's a kernel of truth to all of these and finds its way into these myths. And so there's a connection between the longing of whatever myth that you find in some other ancient tribe, that you say you could see how it's the same. It's just misunderstood. Right? Possibility. The third possibility, which is probably true more than the other three, I think all three can be true in different circumstances. The third option is that there's just simply a longing for a savior and a resurrection and cleanliness, and the idea that the God is angry at us, we better feed it, you know, that kind of thing where you get the idea of sacrifice. And so these are longing things, and so you would expect to find similar type stories. And then when it comes to like the pagan holidays that are taken off by our Christianity, let's take Christmas for example. All right, I did a chapel on this recently, and of you know the Christians taking over, making December 25th the story of Christ, who is the light coming into the world at this time in nature. Okay, that may be a possibility. It may be a possibility that they were trying to overtake a famous or very popular pagan thing. Some say it's even dumber than that, that the ancients thought that you died on the day of your conception. So if he was conceived on March 25th, he died on March 25th, according to their calculations, then he must have been born on December 25th, right? The point of the matter is, no matter what, that does not say that Christianity is some sort of a fraudulent movement. Even if, they were trying to combat and reshape a pagan holiday, that's just good marketing.
Man.
You know, yeah. I mean, the logic behind then Christianity is false because it was similar to some pagan idea, had a day similar to a pagan idea, or even co-opted a pagan holiday. It's a non sequitur to say that then that means that it's false.
And I think, and you guys can correct me on this, but this is something I've been thinking about it. It also expresses, I think, just a general truth. We speak of Christ as the fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy, right? He's the fulfillment of Scripture. But I think you were hitting on, and you can tell me if I'm being unfair to what you were saying, we can also speak of Christ, I would say, as the fulfillment of all well-ordered human longings.
The desire of nations.
Right. That this is longings that are in line, and maybe I'm sounding too Aquinas here, that are in line with what we are created to be, what we are redeemed to enjoy, which can be expressed within paganism, yeah. Right? It isn't, I don't think it always has to just be too, well, the church takes this thing and it's great marketing and it's saying our thing's better. But sometimes it's also saying, like, the thing that you guys in the darkness were grappling around for, and you managed to, you know, get your hands on some stuff and figure out, is it an elephant or something else, you know. This is the thing, which Paul does when he talks about the unknown God, right? You guys know there's this thing. And so I think we sometimes limit ourselves when we think, well, anything pagan, yep, we dismiss, there's nothing there. A lot of the themes we see in those stories are, make them good stories because they're in line with the things that God has kind of ingrained in us to realize we ought to want or to strive for. And so,
are there points of connection?
Yeah, the pagans, why could the pagans produce beautiful things? They could produce beautiful things insofar as they understood these things we should long for and want, right? Why could the pagans and anyone produce beautiful things that are actually ugly things, right? When you see, so you have the Colosseum, but then some of the things that happen there, because the best things can also become the worst when they're disordered or when they're abused. And so I think it's a very American kind of fundamentalist, triumphalistic, and maybe modern, you can correct me, Michael, view to think that it has to be entirely like one or the other. Like it's either Christian or it's pagan, Well, sometimes it's human. I don't know if I'm off on that. You guys can correct me.
C.S. Lewis and Tolkien would speak about this, right? That they would say, you know, they were classified as pagan because they wrote in these myths with, you know, magic and stuff like this. And their rebuttal was the useful myth, right? These are things that we all are asking and desiring, and to speak in a mythological way doesn't mean that you're automatically saying that the resurrection is only a myth. No, in fact, it's even more real in the myth,
right.
Lewis would argue, right? Because there is this, you're not, the myth is telling you of a very real desire of a very real resurrection and salvation. You're not going to be satisfied with a myth. This is your way of saying poetically, I have a desire for a real outcome, for a real story. And so the myth becomes more real in that way, or is a useful myth, or points to something that is actually real. So you do also, I'm glad you said modern, because that really is a very modern scientific black and white way to think about the information given to us. Rather than there would be symbolism, there would be art, there would be something different. It's a very unique thing to only try to describe the human condition in black and white without symbols, right? You're leaving a lot on the table when you only describe somebody again with biology, chemistry, right. Or even doctrine without story.
And we do this in the study of history all the time when we look back. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about a saint. And this is not a religious podcast, but the one guy is a little bit more religious. He's actually been becoming more religious, and he's written some good stuff. So the rest is history. And Tom Holland, his book Dominion is very interesting. But they were talking about St. Cuthbert, and you know, he's this English saint, and his body supposedly doesn't decay for a while, and he's actually like ruling a realm because one of the conquerors is afraid of his body and stuff like that. And the partner on the podcast had well-meaningly, but just kind of said, so obviously, you know, the House of Wessex or whatever is using this to solidify their power or whatever else, as if, like, it was kind of like ignoring, like, did people actually believe this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and saying, well, they were, yep, it was just this bare power, like Machiavellian. Yep. He wasn't saying that, but I'm being simplistic.
He's seen it through the lens of power.
Right, and that is, as moderns, how we look at things. And that is, Christianity can fall into that too, where it looks back and says, was this Christian or not? Right? And it has to be just yes or no, the same as we can look at history and say, was this scientific or not? And the matter of fact, truth is that people believed these things. And even for me to say, is it possible that this guy's body didn't decay? Well, I'm not a Roman Catholic anymore. Right? But that's not to say, I can't completely dismiss the possibility that God can work in ways, or that there could be that somehow, like, the laws of nature have to always triumph. And it collapses people. It makes them less than three-dimensional.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's a flattening. We've talked about this concept before. It's a flattening.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, this is that whole, you know, coming through modernity with the, you know, the whole idea that, you know, we can understand all of this, and that, you know, we can figure it out, and that, you know, science and technology just, you know, it opens up these things, and we are the master of it all. And yet, lo and behold, you know, you find out there are still some parts of this world and the parts of life that you don't really understand, and you don't necessarily have answers for in the world, you know, to use what Taylor's term, you know, the world is much
Taylor
more...
Taylor Swift?
Yeah, Taylor Swift. Yeah, no, Charles Taylor is what I was thinking.
Oh.
But the world...
He's good too.
The world is much more enchanted.
Does he have a number one hit? Yeah. I don't think so.
Nope.
Who's
no,
he dating?
Does not. Yeah. yeah, I haven't kept up on that end. But, you know, but this idea that the world is much more enchanted...
Yeah, it's haunted.
You know, that there are things out there that you don't understand, things, you know, that there are things beyond human sight and comprehension, and not just because we haven't got it yet, but because we're not capable of seeing it. Like, and then, and I think that speaks too to like some of this revival in the current age, is that, you know, people who have kind of got to the point of saying, you know, hey, these answers that you're supposedly offering, they really don't quite hold up. And there are some of these things that I can't understand. And there are some of these things that leave me with this longing. Mm-hmm. And there's got to be something else. And I think Christianity sometimes gets acquainted or gets associated or hitched to, and in some ways that's fair, in other ways definitely not, that they were part of the problem in trying to promise all of these answers that come along with modernity. And so we got to go back before that. And so what was before that? Well, it must be, you know, these, you know, ancient pagan practices that Christianity,
again, or if you want to stay within Christianity, you're going to leave Protestantism,
yeah,
and go to a really trad Cath type thing,
yep,
or
yep,
you know,
yep,
really get in Orthodoxy,
yep,
precisely for the non,
yep,
you know,
right,
the dogmat or
the non, the beyond rational,
yes, yep,
type of, yes, and I think that, you know, you see that, and I think some of that, I also think some of that, like the, with a lot of paganism, there was this fatalist type of thing too, which I think becomes very appealing in a world today where so much of it seems out of your control.
Mm-hmm.
So much of paganism has this fatalist bent to it, and to say, well, this is all just, you know, it's in the hands of the gods or whatever, or fate or whatever else.
Universe.
Yeah, universe. Yeah, you know, there's an appeal to that, you know, and I think you see some of that in like military circles, especially how appealing that becomes.
And I think then your relationship with the spiritual realm is often a quid pro quo kind of thing.
Yep.
I'm trying to manipulate as best, yep, I can with divination, with the dead and those things. And so my sacrifice becomes I'm trying to do something to manipulate the gods or the spiritual realm. And so there's a bit of a control, but there's not the responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let me promote Frederick Bowie again. I know I've done it a few times. He wrote the book, The Spiritual Society, What Lurks Behind Postmodernism. It's where, you know, that was influential for me to speak about pre-modern, modern, and postmodern. And he made the argument that we'll enter into a Therian age, a pagan age, that will leave modernity behind, and it will be much more spiritual, but it won't be Christian. It'll be, and I think,
and won't even be authentically pagan.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
I mean, that's what is it, Kraft or Kraft? Kraft. Yeah. You know, he says, you know, there's going to be people want to go back to this, but there's no going back to it.
Right.
Yep.
You can't live. It's
Christianity buried it.
Yeah, and
it's not going to rise in its, right, ancient form.
I really keep coming back to baseball stadiums when I try to explain this. Like, there's no going back to the old baseball stadiums. So what you're going to do is you're going to keep an old brick building in your outfield and keep the old signage and give it a sense of authenticity, mm-hmm, and, you know, symbolism and reality. But in reality, you still have your... You still have your phone out there with your parking, yep, and your ordering and whatever. You're not going to give up the amenities of the modern,
right,
world to go back to. You're going to try to pick and choose the spiritual aspects of this,
yep,
but you're not going to give up what the modern world has given.
There's no way for it to arise organically.
Can we just lament
the temporary situation?
The passing of the trough urinal.
Wrigley put in new troughs.
Did they?
Yeah, they. I saw a picture the other day.
I would say yes. This would be fantastic.
Yeah,
like the one thing that they should have kept from the old stadium.
Yeah.
I missed that at Tiger Stadium.
Yeah,
yeah.
And if you're really cool, you have on both sides, you know, and just like a little bit of a wall there.
Yeah.
You're looking. And how do you? Where are you supposed to look?
Right.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Anyway, maybe.
Sorry for that digression.
That's right. I had something really brilliant to say after that, but I now I don't know. You were talking about I don't know. What were we talking about? Paganism?
Mm-hmm. Paganism. Yeah. Paganism. Yeah.
And then you went to the baseball parks and you're going to keep part in that.
Before that, and there was something that I wanted to say, but.
Well, he had talked about fatalism.
It. Yep.
Yeah. No, before
military
that.
Military stuff? Before that?
Before that.
The,
I don't remember.
Enchanted, disenchanted, porous, non-porous.
You were mentioning Bowie.
Oh, yeah.
No, but I wanted to.
Well, how about we've got about, I would say.
It's fine. We'll come back to
five and a half minutes. But maybe if we just, if we take, if we make this more about the life of the church, its calendar, and its worship. There's elements that people, even in there, can look at historical, traditional liturgical churches and say, well, that's pagan. This was, right, the Reformed and the Anabaptists did much of this.
Yep. You'll see even here, Roman Catholics aren't Christian.
Right. And I would say this was not an original Lutheran impulse.
No.
But it shows up in American Lutheranism for sure. And there's grounds. The guy who always gets blamed for everything is Constantine. Right? I have a feeling we all say his name differently. Maybe. Do you say Constantine?
I say Constantine.
What do you say?
Constantine.
Okay, or we agree on that. Okay, so it's not like an Augustine shibboleth.
Well, I don't see you pronouncing whatever.
Okay. So.
Augustine, Constantine, Augustine.
Yeah.
Constant.
So people love to point to Constantine, to the fourth.
You're not being very true to yourself.
I'm living in freedom. I'm letting the bird fly.
You just get to choose what meanings you want for words. Yeah.
But if a lot of people will say, well, yeah, this or that thing, anything I don't like came from Constantine, 4th century, you know, the church gets paganized, and there is something, too. There's after the persecution ends, there is an influx of people who probably aren't as catechized as ideally you would have been.
Mistakes were made. We're not saying, you know, matching up saints with God. Mistakes were made. We're not saying,
There's always... I mean, if we think as Protestants and as Lutheran Protestants, we're not subject to syncretism, like let me tell you about a few things. But this can happen in anything. But the idea of, you know, the church calendar or liturgical practices, vestments, church buildings, imagery, will sometimes be brought out too. Well, see, this was just paganism coming into the church, and then there's this desire. You see this with Zwingli. And then with John Hooper, I studied, we're going to go back to the apostolic. And I would say both the Reformed and the Roman Catholics and the Eastern Orthodox make the same mistake in this. When they say they're going to go back to the apostolic, well, it's the apostolic of their imagination.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is no way to actually truly... There was not detailed history written like we think of history as a discipline today about a lot of the things that people say is apostolic.
Right.
Could they be apostolic to some degree? Sure, but there's no way to conclusively know. Now, again, my heuristic, I'm very Protestant and probably modern when I'm saying this, that I'm just not taking at face value this or that is apostolic. But there's plenty of disagreements early on about what truly is apostolic. That being said, whether or not it's apostolic or whether or not it looks like something a pagan did, does that mean we just have to purge the church year, purge the liturgy? How do we approach if there seems to be things where there could, our churches look like, are built like basilicas, which were government buildings for pagans? You know, what maybe just short and sweet if we're looking at it, ought a Christian think when they hear those things?
Let me just get on my soapbox a little bit. I hear this from people.
I need a soapbox sound effect. Here, I'm going to do this noise. Yeah, he just stepped up.
Man, they're like, well, we just need to get past that, all of the nonsense and get back to the real church when we just worshiped. Like, did you even read Acts? I mean, what? There was a serious vetting process going on. There were very, like, this idea that you usually comes from, can I just worship the way I want? Like, are you kidding me? Like, only in this very recent period of time did you even have the guts or the gall to say, this is how I want to do something according to my likes. It wouldn't even dawn on them to just go ex corde.
Like the apostles took surveys.
Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah. It's just like, have you ever, what? So there's no there's no golden age. There's no, and it's very pietistic because what they're really trying to say is, I don't like any of the institutional physical stuff. What I want to do is just have me and Jesus kind of thing. And that was perfect back then. You know, it's sort of like hippies, you know, kind of. The truth of the matter is that actually says something about you more than somebody else, and you are being taken by a culture, right? And so it's the exact opposite of what you're trying to find, this sort of this pure nature that's
the
been
pure primitive church,
unencumbered by any kind of industry or roads or whatever. This kind of pure natural kind of thing, which is, of course, complete nonsense and a lot of, and very hypocritical. So then, you know, the worship service.
Everybody wants to be a romantic until you got to poop in the woods.
Yeah, you go off the grid for about 6 hours.
Yeah.
So
eat a lot of fiber.
The early stages of worship are coming out of the synagogue. They're coming out of the Passover meal, word and meal. Those kind of central themes, and the liturgy is going to be very biblical, coming out of the synagogue and stuff like that. You have a formative period, right, where these things are formed around word and meal. And then, yeah, you do have then during the imperial church where you can open up things, and this becomes you adapt to your culture. Well, now we can have a building. Well, I don't, you know, your building's going to look like the buildings around there. Right?
Buildings are pagan.
What are you talking about? Like, you're going to use musical styles, right?
The pastor's going to wear some stuff.
Got to wear something.
Yep.
Please do. So. To think that
they didn't have Packer ties yet.
Yeah. So to think that somehow I don't today let the culture affect me.
It's laughable.
It's laughable.
Right.
It's very naive. Right. And so there's still a question of how much culture you bring in and what baggage do you bring in. Right. And it's usually somebody that wants to bring in their own culture and ignore the baggage of that right. musical style or whatever. And it's just hard. It hurts my brain sometimes mm-hmm. to think about how you discuss things with that type of I need to stop right now before I get angry.
Right.
That type of person, mm-hmm. right, who is clearly has an agenda to everybody else. It may not be even clear to them, but they clearly have an agenda and are being ahistorical in this. So, at the same time, and this is true in this Easter season too, that it's not just sort of this blind mystical faith. It's based on the testimony of the apostles. There's story, but there's testimony, right? It's not one or the other,
right?
And you see that with the parables, but then also how Luke writes history. You see that,
and then the epistles are addressing parish issues.
Yeah. And it's very real, it's very gritty, but there's symbolism all over the place, and you need to navigate that stuff. In the same way, when you are bringing the symbols into worship, as you're trying to mention, there is going to be artistic license, and there is going to be wisdom in bringing in certain things, but making it your own.
The pastor dressing up like the Easter Bunny.
So certain things, you know, I didn't laugh at that because there's probably a pastor who did that.
That could be. I hope not. I'm not going to Google it, lest I be disappointed.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And what's lacking in all of this, I think this is true of a lot of things going on. It's a lack of wisdom. Mm-hmm. There's a lack of, and I would say, gospel wisdom.
Discernment.
Sorry. It's usually things seen through the lens of selling a product, getting people to make a decision. It's very up here in the mind. Yep. Symbolism. We've talked about this before. If you get away from deep symbolism, that vacuum is filled by brands.
A hope for symbolism. Purity that's divorced from the gospel.
That vacuum is going to be filled with something.
Yeah. It's always going to be law.
And this is where I think we need to start addressing things through the lens of the big questions. What is beauty? What is art? What is a human being? How shall I live? How do I interact with people? Instead of through the lens of only what is useful or only what is going to make me feel in a certain way. Because, again, it's a flattening. It's a very shallow existence.
It from a Lutheran perspective,
and the pig,
it's not incarnational or sacramental. And I would rather a pagan to an animated world and thinks there's
some depth there at least
than the strict rationalist who's just there's just stuff.
There's
a reason that they don't write good stories. They write dystopian stories. Yeah.
There is something about the pagan myths that say they're creative, they're symbolic, they're longing. How about this? I can deal with a pagan myth because we're talking the same language.
Yep.
I got a better answer than your pagan myth.
Yep.
I got a better, and I even got better questions, but at least you're asking the right questions. That's something different than arguing with somebody who believes that their reason is the alpha and the omega.
And it's that better answer that's the reason that Christianity did bury paganism, mm-hmm. right? I mean, the fact that people recognized the answer is better, mm-hmm. and I don't want what I had. I want mm-hmm. what Christ yeah. offers.
And not even the answer, the questions were better.
Right, yeah. Yep, that too.
You can find, the questions are there, you fine-tune the question, because sometimes, as we know, asking the right question is just as important as giving the right answer. And so there's a fine-tuning of the great big questions and better answers where maybe in a more strictly modern rationalist, they've dismissed the question as a non-question.
Right.
Is there a God?
Yeah. What fool would even ask that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that was a
good
discussion.
Convert you? Did we
convert
you?
Oh, yeah. That's right. You ask some good questions, and you have better answers.
Michael mentioned Lewis and Tolkien, and they also were big fans of Norse mythology.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I guess you are in good company
right.
with that. All right, we're at about 45 minutes, which is, we said we're going to aim 35 to 40, but 45, that's still pretty good.
Yeah.
Technically, it's 46, but 45 sounds better.
Right.
If you're a non-Christian, hey, hopefully you got some value out of this. You don't have to throw out Homer and Virgil if you're getting interested in Christian theology. If you're a Christian, maybe you can go ahead next time someone's really worked up about this or that's pagan, tell them to touch grass, right? And chill out and know that some of those things are worth thinking about, but at the end of the day, if they lead us to lose sight of the main thing, that's not good. And so what's the deal with Christianity and paganism? Well, I think the big thing at the end of the day is what's the deal with the truth? And that's what we have in Christ, who is the Logos, who is the Word, who is the fulfillment of the Scriptures, and is the fulfillment of everything that is good, beautiful, and true. And that's why I hope in this Easter season where we celebrate that He is risen, you will join us in letting the bird fly.
Sun goes down, get with my party and I begin to clown. I don't care what the people are thinking, I'm not drunk, I'm just a drinker. I set 'em up, another round, I set 'em up.